C-167. Number 6A.
Now, today we take again those first four chapters and exercise our consciousness in the tonality of the seven synonymous terms. We know that fundamentally God is defined through the seven synonymous terms. So the indefinite term is exchanged for seven more definite terms. But we also know that alone by exchanging the term God for the seven synonymous term does not yet give us a clear understanding of what God is, what is meant by that indefinite term God. In order to know more about God through the seven synonymous terms, we begin to teach that each one of those synonymous terms must be understood through the ideas characterizing the seven synonymous term, that is, to define through a list of ideas what each synonymous term means. That's where we started out with our teaching, that we asked the student to go through the whole textbook, look up every reference on each synonymous term, and with every reference ask himself through what ideas, through what characteristic ideas is each synonymous term expressed, so that finally we had a list of ideas for each synonymous term characterizing that specific synonymous term. This is a preparatory study for the real thing, namely by analyzing those synonymous terms and defining them through a list of ideas is only getting a better concept, an intellectual, academic, literal concept of what each of these seven synonymous terms mean. Now we know that the letter is not sufficient, that it needs also the spirit of it. In other words, how can we put, so to say, the spirit into the letter? How can the letter become spirit, a spiritual atmosphere, a spiritual tone? And there we have introduced, in order that we understand each other, the term tone, the tone of mind, the tone of spirit, the tone of soul, principle, life, truth, and love, or then the term tonality, to get the tonality of what mind, spirit, soul, etc. means. Now, how do we get that tonality? There are various ways of getting that tonality, which is the spirit of the letter. One means is, as we have shown in the beginning, and what is still right to do, that one is taking that list of ideas and ponder those ideas characterizing one specific synonymous term. See what this concept, what these terms really mean as ideas of the synonymous term. Asking, what does it mean that mind is the creator? What does that mean? If mind is the creator, then he's also the producer, because they are very near to each other, these terms of creator and producer. When we see that he's creator, we can see that he must be the cause, because everything starts with the creator. And so little by little, we build up within ourselves some kind of a logical, divinely logical atmosphere of how these ideas on the mind hinge together, how they blend together. We called it the interrelationship of the ideas within the category of a synonymous term. So that little by little we begin to sense that all these terms blend together, that they need each other, that they, so to say, ask for that meaning. And finally, in thinking about these ideas in this way, constantly asking what does it mean, constantly asking how big that is, constantly asking how saving and helping that is for us, so that we have a kind of awe before this contemplation, and doing that over and over and over and over, we get to the point where then these list of ideas lose the significance of being an idea, of being a list of ideas, and we get the tone, really, of the synonymous term mind. So that if we culture that after a while, say after a year, two or three, we get that tonality of the term, of each synonymous term. That is then something else than to think about a list of ideas. That is then a spiritual atmosphere, a spiritual tonality, it's a spiritual meaning that is found, which includes then all those ideas. Without mentioning them specifically, or without memorizing them specifically, without naming them specifically, it is then an atmosphere which just rests in the atmosphere of mind. And with mind, you hear the whole realm of those qualities that characterize mind, or the realm of spirit, and you can feel when you know spirit, when you read in the textbook spirit, that that is not just a term, that it's not just a word, but that it is a whole universe that is included in that one term spirit. And everything that falls into that category of spirit is bent by it, so we have a very redundant sense of the synonymous term, including, so to say, everything that is necessary for a situation. And so you go to soul and to principle, life, truth, and love. This is something that is not done too often. The students are mostly happy if they have a very long list of ideas, and so they only have built up the concept of a synonymous term, but not the spiritual tonality of it. And with the spirit, and with just with that concept building, which is the first step and the necessary step, we will not go very far, because they are concepts. They are not yet the spiritual significance and the spiritual meaning that is embedded in those concepts. So that second step has to be done by every student, and as far as I can see, most students resist that. Most students do not take that time to really culture their consciousness and mold their consciousness in the tonality of the synonymous term. This is one way to get to the tonality. When one has that tonality, then there are other ways to find more and more the spiritual meaning and the spiritual content of a synonymous term. One way of culturing it further is naturally the following. The synonymous term only belongs to that main category of the nature of God. But we have two other categories, main categories, namely the fourfold operation of God through Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And furthermore, then, we have another category, namely that category which defines the four dimensions of being, the four levels of science. Naturally, the seven synonymous term will always blend with the other categories, with the categories of the four sides of the city, the categories with the four levels of science. So, in order to get a clearer, a more encompassing tonality of the seven synonymous terms, we have to also see that they reflect the second category, namely Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And in order to culture that, what it means when we have mind and see it from the point of view of the Word, or from the point of view of the Christ, or Christianity, and science, is naturally enlarging the tonality of mind and blending it with that second category. This is something that we can exercise and culture if we take, as we will do today, if we take, so to say, first the subject of mind in the first chapter, then see how that first chapter prayer, which has the tone of the Word, how then that tone of mind is evolved through the second chapter, which has already a little bit the tone of the Christ in it, and how it evolves to Christianity in the third chapter. What is the first subject in the third chapter? Marriage, still mind, so that we get Christianity tone of mind, and finally can go to the fourth chapter and see how mind is treated there in from the point of view of science, and we get the scientific touch of the synonymous term mind. In this way, naturally, we can go through the whole textbook, through all the 16 chapters, and therefore expand, so to say, our tonality of mind through the 4x4, which therefore gives a very extensive sense of the tone of mind. Now, we have only done the first four chapters and have quite a good overall view what the first subject in each chapter was presenting to us, and so we could exercise ourselves really in seeing how mind, right from the first subject of the textbook, begins to unfold and brings in the tonality of the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science in the first four chapters. So in this way, our culture of what the synonymous term mean can be enlarged quite a bit. It is not the final enlargement, because we know we could go through the other 12 chapters too. And then as a third exercise, one can culture those synonymous terms by seeing how they appear in the third category, in the category of the levels of science, how they appear in the tonality of science itself, of divine science, of absolute Christian science, and of Christian science. That's another class we give in the educational program for the sake of finding more and more the tonality, really, of the capitalized terms. Why should we find it? Because we see that if we have those three categories of capitalized terms, the seven, the four, and the four, we really have the fundamentals of the science of being. If we can touch the tonality and spiritual meaning of that, then we have touched the whole. And then actually we have compounded and summarized and integrated everything within those 15 root notions. And that actually, if you understand those 15 root notions, we wouldn't need any further teaching. It's just a matter if we can understand them. And perhaps next year we can see how we can build up those seven and the four into the one model of being. And naturally then we must have a good tonality of the seven synonymous terms and the four sides of the city and the four levels of science. And then we can really, with one model, with one page, so to say, with a chart, really calculate infinitely. So Today we make that exercise together, how we could tone-wise culture the each one of the seven synonymous terms by always taking the subject that we have found in each of the chapter. There are always seven subjects, and so we can go horizontally through our chart, this chart which we had yesterday, and just flow through it and see if we can culture ourselves to see what ideas characterize mind, mostly from the point of view of word, which are the ideas characterizing mind from the point of view of Christ, then of Christianity, and then of science. So we take first mind, and we read together the horizontal and remember what a subject is explained in those chapters. We start out with the tone of prayer, and we have seen that in the tone of prayer, it is really that prayer of true desire. So everything starts with a true desire, and we know the desire of what? To know God as He is. So we have a desire of mind, so we can see that mind is that which brings forth the true desire to know mind as it is, because mind wants to be known by itself. Mind knows us, and therefore it wants that we know mind as mind is. And that triggers off within ourselves that wonderful attitude of mind, which in the human is always desiring to know God as He is. And so we have therein, in that first subject of mind, we have all that seeking to know God, that true desire to know God. That mind will mold even our desires and exalt our desires until we really begin to have a pure desire to know God as He is. If we go further to the next chapter on Atonement and Eucharist, we can see that their mind is expressed through very different qualities than the desire to know. There, that mind says to that desire, now it's not enough that you have a true desire to know God as He is, go and act accordingly. Get out from your knees and act and do something. So Jesus acted boldly, and we get there a great sense now of mind that triggers off within us the activities to go along the way along the law of atonement and tread that way with bold actions. That we do, you see, mind is activity. Is acting, is doing things, that we do the wisdom of God, that we do the will of wisdom. Again, we have the mind as the will of wisdom that triggers off within us, that we can't hold back just desiring, that Christ comes in and says to that desire, go and do what is in the line of wisdom. Do things. Jesus acted boldly. He did life's work aright. And so we must also do life's work aright. And therefore we get here a sense of mind's impulsion, mind impelling us, that's the tone of mind impelling us to express that desire of prayer. If we do that, what happens? If we go and do things, we'll see in the third chapter that the outcome of it is that we go along the law of atonement, that we have to keep that law, that we have to be faithful to that law. And so the first subject, remember, in marriage was that which said that we should obey the moral provisions, the legal provisions, the commandments of Moses, that is all necessary, the moral regulations, in order that the higher Christianity can be brought out, a better civilization can be brought out. So we get very much that sense constantly that it starts out with a desire, and that desire is first molded properly by mind. So it's not we that have a desire and that formulate the desire. It is really the divine mind that alone can mold the true desire. But that mind says, as the Christ, this is not just a static or a worshipping state of consciousness. It is Christ is always the power of manifestation. It says, now express that desire by doing it, by doing what your motives are. Do the way, go along the way of life. Do the will of wisdom. And if you do the will of wisdom in marriage, you must know that you have to stick to that law and not give in at every other moment, that you have to be steadfast in doing that, and that means obey the law, obey the moral, the legal, and the spiritual provisions. So that mind is now showing us this law-abiding sense that is established within us. It would be the old law of the Jews if we would try to obey the laws, because we have to obey the laws. That is the Old Testament. The science says, no, that which makes us to be law-abiding is actually mind itself. The moment when we have that desire to know mind as it is, then it fills us with a gratitude, with the awe of the nature of mind, and that mind in Atonement and Eucharist makes us do according to the desire, and that doing of the desire is therefore again mind that triggers it off. And so in Christianity it's again mind that wants us to be law-abiding and puts us under the pressure to be law-abiding. So that these qualities in the human are always coming from mind and not from us ourselves. The source is always in the synonymous term. And this is then shown very clearly in the fourth chapter, and then goes to the fourth chapter, to the three different part. Then finally she says in the first part that mind is that which maintains all identities from the blade of grass to the star, that it is mind that only expresses itself as ideas, that nothing is real but ideas. So that we get the feeling there now, she says, that behind really those qualities in prayer, atonement, and marriage is really mind itself, the idea of mind, and that idea of mind alone maintains all identities of being. So that we drop, so to say, everything else, we see that evil is neither place, person, or thing, so that it is an illusion that does away, so to say, with any opposing human sense, and says everything that is not of the nature of mind must not be taken into account. It is illusion, it is a dream. Therefore, all that really happens is mind and mind's ideas. So behind the whole scene is the activity of mind and mind's idea, and only that realm is the realm of reality. Everything else is just illusion. We get really to the core of reality here. Which then in the second part goes on and shows that this mind is really that mind which is the only intelligence in the universe. That mind is that intelligence which is the only agent for healing, that intelligence is the healing agent, the saving agent, and therefore there is no other saving agent. No medicine, no hypnotism, no spiritualism is a healing agent, but alone mind and mind's ideas that have been established in the first part are now seen in the second part as being the healing agent. And then in the third part we see that this realm of ideas has to be admitted, has to be accepted. So within ourselves, the divine mind says, accept me, admit me, recognize me as what I am, and so gives a sense that the divine mind was constantly working within me, right from the point of prayer, right through atonement and Eucharist and marriage. It was actually mind that was at work, that mind activated within me that desire, that activated within me to do the will of wisdom, that activated within me really to be law-abiding, and says nothing is going on in spiritualism but God and his idea, mind and his idea, and this is the only healing, saving agent in the second part. Therefore, admit it. Admit what? Admit to yourself that man is God's own image and likeness, and that sets man free to master the infinite idea. And I hear that tone, that if I have let in those messages of mind in the first three chapters, that then I become a master in the realm of mind, so that we can master the idea. That's the whole tone of mind that flows right through those first four chapters. Bringing them out in the next chapter, which we haven't done yet, that this should be the only influence under which we put ourselves. Then we hear suddenly a change in tone, namely to the Christ chapters, which says that we are constantly under the impact and influence of the one mind, and therefore never under the influence of something else. So that through those first four chapters, the word chapters, we are really prepared to be the soil is fertile. To be a fertile soil, so to say, into which the Christ idea can sow its seed, so that it can blossom and grow without a great opposition. Through the first four chapters, we really put out of the way all that which could really be in the way for mind's manifestation as the Christ. This is mind.